I will call the Joint Committee on Emergency Preparedness and Ocean Policy to order. It is Tuesday, April 17th, and today we have our friendly ODOT coming to give us informational meeting only. And welcome. I'm sorry there aren't more of us here for various reasons. But we're here.
Madam Chair, that's perfectly fine, and I appreciate your time. I'm Mike Mars from the Department of Transportation, and I hope the members have a copy of my testimony there. I'm here to discuss wireless communication at the Department of Transportation. We use this kind of communication to help maintain, build, and safely operate our highway system. I think the members are pretty aware of the kinds of things that we use it for, but just to give some examples, accident recovery and highway debris cleanup are examples. Snow removal during winter storms, as well as making sure we can pass along information to trucking and traveling public via the tripcheck.com website that we think works very well for getting information out about how the system excuse me, is working. In the 2005 legislative session, the Owen project was created, and I think the members know about the partnership that's been established through that process. The bottom line is that the Owen project will update the current ODOT microwave and land mobile radio system to enable ODOT to communicate internally as well as externally to stakeholders, as well as with other first responders. As far as background, the current ODOT microwave and land mobile radio system is an analog point-to-point line-of-sight system. For an employee in a vehicle to communicate with a coworker, both must be able to communicate with and have line of sight with a tower that must be in the same frequency. The system enables one person to talk with multiple people listening to the communication, and the current sets of frequencies ODOT personnel access are based on the purpose and areas for which the frequencies are licensed. When a person is using a radio and moves outside the range of the license frequency, they have to change the frequency to continue the radio operations. So there are many limitations to the current system. It's a 30-year-old analog system, which goes back to the time when I was in the military, and the kind of radios that we're using now are similar to those kinds that were trained and used by the military at that time. We've had to go through process of finding replacement parts through eBay, processes of cannibalizing other old equipment in order to be able to use it for spare parts, taking broken circuit boards and replace them at the component level. It's a very difficult process to get it replaced. It takes a lot of work on our part and a lot of creativity in order to keep systems going which are no longer supported by the vendors. So that's the process we're in. Much of the microwave radio equipment that we have is no longer supported. Many of the ODOT staff who maintain them have 5 to 10 years left before retirement. Hiring knowledgeable people for these systems is nearly impossible. The individuals we're receiving today receive their training in schools or the military, which are using more modern systems. So difficult to keep that kind of a system up. About 40% of the buildings and towers that house the equipment are inadequate and need to be rebuilt or upgraded in some kind of way. And all the sites require work to comply with the industry grounding standards about the grounding of the sites. So bottom line is that a lot of work to be done there. We're doing the best we can within the revenues that we have. However, the thing that really helps us in moving ahead to some extent is coordination between emergency response agencies today. That's based on the incident command system. That system allows for certain protocols on managing emergencies, and that makes sure that at least we can do our best within the resources that we have to use that ICS or incident command system training to cross multiple jurisdictions and allows folks to be able to listen in at least to the multiple conversations that are going on as best they can, even though they're not interoperable systems. With some foresight 30 years ago and using best practices at that time, ODOT designed multiple redundancies into the current wireless system. If something should fail, the systems have the capabilities to still enable it to communicate up to a certain point. ODOT has teamed up with the state police as well as both maintenance as well as personnel to ensure that we're using similar equipment and maintaining that equipment together, and that way we're ensuring that we've increased the pool of technicians that are involved in the process, as well as making sure that it's a more efficient process by using the two teams together. Even if Owen does not move forward, ODOT will need to change its two-way radio system from wideband to narrowband. And this is in order to be compliant with the Federal Communications Commission standards that are required by December 31st, 2012, or in other words, by 2013. Yep, upgrades will involve land mobile radio, the transmitting as well as repeater systems. ODOT will also need to move to a newer digital system get digital equipment for its microwave system. This change will make it easier to find skilled workers to maintain the system, considering the comparison to our old system now and trying to find the workers for that. The FCC licensed frequencies to jurisdictions on a statewide basis. There is an FCC requirement that written agreements be in place whenever we work with other jurisdictions to use their frequencies. Currently, ODOT has 150 reciprocal agreements with local jurisdictions to use their frequencies. The sharing of frequencies creates a form of limited interoperability for local jurisdictions and ODOT. The problem is that we've got to use multiple radios, and you can imagine trying to carry 3-4 radios with you and still being mobile doing all the other things you need to do, as well as the cost of acquiring all those radios in order to be interoperable. ODOT's current system covers about 90% of the state highway system and about 85% of the state population. At the same time, it only covers about 67% of the area of the state in terms of geography. The estimated cost for ODOT to make the compliance and to be compliant with FCC standards is about $75 million. We see that as about $16.9 million for equipment and an estimated $58.1 million for site improvements such as towers, buildings, microwave, and related equipment. Our investment in the current system to get where we are now is difficult to estimate because it's been done over many years. But to this point, it would be well over $150 million, maybe well over $200 million in 2007 dollars. So by way of summary, the emergency response communications will continue to be reliant on the incident command system. ODOT needs to update its microwave and land mobile radio system to be compliant with federal rules in any event. Being part of the state interoperable system to improve the overall emergency communications is seen as the best solution for the agency. Should the ON project not move forward, however, ODOT still needs to rebuild and reconfigure its wireless system. Madam Chair and members, I'm open to any questions.
Thank you very much, Mike, for that presentation. It was not exactly what we were probably hoping for, but I'm sure it's the real picture here. Senator George, would you have any questions?
If I could, Madam Chair. Mike, just kind of give me an idea. In a lot of businesses right now, especially in the construction industry, they use Nextel. We've now moved over to an R company, where it's like a walkie-talkie system connected to a cell phone system. We use that, a lot of construction companies that use that. A lot of private businesses use that. Also, in remote areas, you have satellite phones. What are some of in what you guys and how I see how you guys use radios? Why couldn't we? And maybe you need to have connection with the local police and others. But why couldn't we have you guys more of a Nextel system and in a satellite cell phone system.
Madam Chair and Senator George, the issue is being able to communicate on a consistent basis no matter the site and location and to get around the state. When we've got all the different locations that we need to communicate in, whether it's Southern Oregon, Northern Oregon, the coast, we have to deal with all different kinds of situations as well as to communicate with our partners. So trying to make sure that we have a way to get in touch with our partners is the bottom line. If you have a company that only has to communicate within itself in a much more limited site basis, you don't have the same kind of limitations that we do. So, Madam Chair and Senator George, if they'd like me to go into more detail or get you more information about some comparison information we have, I can, but that's the bottom line.
I guess, Madam Chair, the only question I have is when I envision how you guys use radios, and maybe I'm just misinformed on how you guys actually use radios, when I think of, like, the police, they need to be talking with the fire departments, they need to talk about everybody. When I think of you guys, I'm thinking more that you're communicating with. It's maybe I don't understand exactly what all of the scope of your of the communication system is doing.
Madam Chair and Senator George, thank you for that further explanation. I can help me further answer your question. It may appear at times that we're just dealing with maintenance between maintenance to maintenance, point to point within maintenance. But the reality is that most of the time we're dealing with other emergency responders. Maintenance comes on site in order to clear the road, but an emergency responder is there. Maybe it's the police, maybe it's a ambulance company, maybe it's a local fire department that's coming on site. We have to be able to communicate with them about what we're doing and what's going on, when a roadway might be clear, the fact that people shouldn't be coming to a certain site. So it actually is amongst ourselves at times, but it's just as important to others. And so that's the challenge that we have to deal with about making sure that we're communicating with both approaches.
Okay. Thank you.
Follow up? All right. Representative Cowan?
This is an interesting configuration.
I feel like a tennis match.
I have no questions.
All right. Tell me, who all can you communicate with right now? You named ambulance, fire, police, inside the agency, within the agency on road work. And I've got your percentages here, population and so forth. But who all can you, if you needed to, can you communicate with?
Madam Chair, we've got those reciprocal agreements with 150 local governments, so we communicate with them. That leaves out about 100 other local governments. Most of them are either involved with by partnering with a larger city close by, or working in some kind of way to communicate with us. But there are still some that we do not have contact with. So we don't have the ability to go out and say we're going to be able to have a contact with every single city when we go out to a site. That's number one. Number two, beyond public sector jurisdictions, there are, like I said, ambulance companies and others that we need to communicate with. What we try to do is work that through the police agencies or local fire agencies to communicate that we need something to happen and get that to them secondhand. It's generally not occurring firsthand. In a few examples, we have the ability to do firsthand communication with them because they're part of a reciprocal agreement with the local government. But most of the time, a lot of those private folks are ones that we don't have the ability to communicate with. And so that's where you run into problems about being able to make sure you have somebody on site at a certain time and making sure that the management of a situation is done well. Another area of concern is federal government. Federal government has its own radio system. We carry radios in many of our vehicles in order to communicate with them. But just like dealing with local governments, there are some areas where we aren't able to get that communication out, either because of the kind of systems we're using or because of the difference between our system and theirs. So I think the direct answer is 150 local jurisdictions. We have an agreement about communication, and we take care of that. We have the ability to have sort of jury-rig communications with others to do our best to connect with them, but we don't have an official way to get that done. We do that through unofficial ways that get the job basically there, but we have a lot of ways to go to deal with interoperability.
What are the chances of your system holding up in a disaster? In other words, a lot of systems go down. And so I'm just curious as to what you think the sustainability of your system as it is today would be.
Madam Chair, difficult question. In terms of sustainability, one of our major concerns is wind and further erosion of the capacity of the system. When you see the statistics about condition of the buildings and other structures, wind storms coming through do have an impact. So that's one thing. If it was a windstorm, it has an impact because of the direct result. In terms of something like a tsunami, which might not have as much wind impact, but would be mainly be waterborne impact, most of our repeaters and transmitters are on high facilities, high mountaintops, hilltops, that kind of thing. So it wouldn't have as much impact about our ability to respond in a tsunami kind of situation. Lastly, when we have large disasters in one pretty focused area, like an earthquake or something such as that, the challenge there is the frequencies that are being used and to try to make sure that you have communication when things are jammed and you don't have a free frequency to really make sure it's clear and used just for this function. By not having interoperability in a local area to be able to deal with something, you've got everybody with a different licensed area, and our folks trying to carry the different radios, others trying to carry the different radios. It's a lot of capacity focused on one area, which results in a lot of problems. And then you also have the cell phone issues. Everybody's trying to communicate whether they're okay, calling their mom, other things, and so that makes it, that's the problem there. By having an interoperable system that everybody's working off the same one, that really helps in that kind of situation. It really helps for the other situation where you have problems with windstorm and other issues, because we'll have newer equipment, newer antenna and transmission sites that would deal with that component. Even with a tsunami, the issue of making sure that everybody's dealing with it similarly, because although it may come against the whole Oregon coast, it probably will focus on certain areas that are hit the hardest, and then you have the same problem as the earthquakes. So the answer is, for depending on the event, is how it depends on how much response we have and what the impact will be.
Representative Cowan.
Now I have two questions, actually.
All right, good.
Thank you, ma'am. When we were talking about the connectivity to some of the other responders in terms of ambulances or other emergency responders, let me tell you where my frame of reference is. So when I ask this question, coming out of emergency responses at a county level, most of our road work is done by the County Public Works Department, but it's really important for the rest of our responders in a natural disaster situation, windstorm, trees down everywhere, that kind of thing, to be able to hear the road department's radio traffic, if you will, because there's kind of a constant update for all the other responders at that point as to which roads are closed, which ones are, you know, where we mm-hmm. have a new tree down, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm wondering if in the current situation, what you've got, you may not have the agreements in place and such like to talk to every ambulance company, but are they all able to monitor your radio contacts between the road folks to hear what's going on out there?
Madam Chair and Representative Cowan, yes, the most of the sizable county response entities do have radios to be able to hear what we're doing because they have the reciprocal agreements with us. So the county itself does. The problem is if you've got someone other than a rural fire protection district or a private responder who isn't actually that county or isn't actually a sizable responder, we don't have the agreement with them, and so then it's going to be more a guess case to determine whether they have the ability to listen to what we're giving out or not. They definitely have a way to do it secondhand because they can come to the county, come to local police agency, local fire agency, where there is that connection. But the problem is whether they're always in touch with that and able to catch it at least secondhand. So they do have the ability to catch it secondhand, but to hear it firsthand, some of them don't.
So if you don't have an agreement in place with, say, an ambulance service, they might not hear what's going on?
Certainly in the case of public entities, if there's not an agreement with every public entity, or certainly we don't have the agreements with the private entities, there is the possibility of them missing that, yes.
Okay. Second question, if I could?
Yes. Follow-up.
Sort of follow-up, kind of moving on. I'm not completely conversant with the Owen what all it entails, but I am familiar with something happening and suddenly all of our cell communications are jammed. Every responder in the world and every individual in the community gets on their cell phones and you can get a cell call mm-hmm. through the system if you had to. So I'm curious with the proposed Owen system, will that sort of bypass that cellular traffic into a whole different system that we wouldn't have that problem?
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, two things. First of all, I mentioned the incident command structure,
right.
And one of the benefits of that incident command structure is discipline at the emergency site response. And within the resources that we have now, there can be a determination that certain radios are only going to be used for certain activities in order to reduce the amount of frequency concern that the representative's alluding to. So now we have the ability to deal with it to some extent, but it's very limited because of all the different radios that people are carrying and trying to communicate the message. So if you move that forward then to Owen, where it would be a statewide system, where it's operated on the basis of a similar backbone, similar understanding about frequencies being used that are managed using the incident command system to say these are the primary things we're going to communicate on, and this kind of emergency, these are the levels that you will have preference and priority in order to use it. So that discipline results in a better communication, a better use of the communication system that we have, and the things that absolutely have to get out will get out. So that's what we would look for the discipline that would happen with Owen.
Follow-up? I understand that, and I understand an incident command system and that control that you'd have within that structure. You have no control over the general public's use of cell phones. And so I'm trying to figure out if we're in two different communication worlds.
Madam Chair, Representative, you're right. It is two different communication worlds. What we're talking about are different megahertz, and I don't think you probably want to get into that discussion, but it would be handled in a different way that does not cross-cut.
So the fact that everybody else is on their cell phone or trying to be would not impact our emergency response.
Not under an ON response, but I don't want to forget the fact that there are a lot of management people in emergency response agencies who are still trying to use a cell phone to get regular work done to communicate internally. But in terms of communicating across organizations, the system would be taken care of through the ON communication.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about your towers. You were talking about most of your towers are up high, because towers are a big thing in the ON planning.
Yes.
And it's a big part of expense. And also we have people very concerned about how they're going to look if they are in, they don't want, particularly on the coast, they don't want anything to disturb the beauty of the scenery, which of course would be added extra cost if you are going to camouflage them in some way. But are your towers of such that ON would be using any of them?
Madam Chair, I should have brought in a picture of tower to give you a perspective. But yes, some of the towers that we currently have could be used in the ON structure. So it's not a matter of 100% being different. Matter of fact, we just signed an agreement today moving ahead in Southern Oregon for a tower that would go up that can make that transition. At the same time, as I mentioned, looking at 40% of building having major concerns, those kinds of issues, we're going to be looking at a lot of change as we transition to ON in order to make sure that they're stable and get the job done. Plus, the nature of analog versus digital kind of communication is different, and the locations for the towers are different in order to take care of different kinds of problems that are strengths and weaknesses of different kind of systems. So under ON, we would have to have new towers in order to cover those kinds of issues, but there are some that would be able to transition between the two, the current system and ON.
One of the things that this is off track, and I don't want to get to that except that outside of the committee, I would appreciate it if you would talk to me about it, and that is in Representative Cowan's in my district where analog is going to digital and eliminating OPB for viewers up in the Lincoln County area. I'm sure that Representative Cowan is getting the response. And my mail is very heart-rendering. Many very elderly people writing personal notes pleading to not take away their entertainment where they are relatively homebound and watch OPB over long extended hours of the day. And so I would appreciate any assistance that you might give me in that area, and talking analog to digital made me think about that.
Certainly.
Well, for instance, let me just ask you this. Can you, with the system you have today, communicate very well with Umatilla, with their system there? They have a very fine communication system.
Madam Chair, they do have a fine communication system there. The way we deal with them is like others where we have a reciprocal agreement is to use certain frequencies when we communicate with them. We cannot enter their system, which is in essence, a totally different level of system than what we have now, but we can communicate with them on radio to get communication about what's occurring in terms of their warning system. So we get it on radio. We aren't actually part of their communication system to be able to multiply that approach around the state.
Is your agency or your I think this is agency-wide. Is your agency so proficient in what they do and are so trained and experienced that in times of an emergency of any kind, whether it's flooding up in Tillamook or whether it would be something that would happen down on the coast, are they beyond needing drills to react and respond to emergencies?
Boy, Madam Chair, I'd like to say that we're perfect and don't have any need of training, but we absolutely do need training. And so we're having a training on the 30th of this month, and we're also having a training this next summer, depending on, both of them will cover different areas, but point is, we've always got to train. And there's always going to be turnover. We have about a 9 to 10% turnover every year, so the person we trained last year might be gone next year. So we have to make sure that we're vigilant with that. And we consider that to be a responsibility, and we keep up with our training and make sure that that's done in an appropriate way. At the same time, training our folks who are coming in new dealing with the radio system itself, not the response now by maintenance employees and others who are training with that and dealing with best they can, but in terms of training our employees who actually work, the technicians with the radio system, is becoming almost impossible because of the age of the equipment. And at a point not too far in the future, we won't be able to find the people that are able to deal with the 1972 PRC-77 kind of equipment that we've got. So that makes it so that the process gets much more difficult, and that's why Owen and the timing for Owen, and actually the timing for the federal requirement, is something that not only do we need to respond to from the standpoint of the federal government, we need to respond to for ourselves.
I'm going to ask you a hardball question here. 1970s, why has the maintenance been so delayed, and why hasn't money been in budgets and requesting to upgrade your equipment all this time? Why have we waited this many years and now say we're getting stuff off of eBay?
Yeah. Madam Chair, like so many things within the state system, if you're able to get by, and it, compared to a bridge falling apart and the citizens not being able to travel on that bridge, the priority goes to the direct service to the customer. So if we can get by with the radio by tape or by some mechanism that just allows it to get the basic job done, we have made those decisions when you're in a constrained environment fiscally. So it's not like it's something I want to go back and say is the perfect way to manage the situation, but within certain dollars and looking at whether the public is directly affected by something that is going to fall apart today and is a risk to them, or whether it's something that the hardship will be to us and that we can work around that concern, that's why we made those decisions. So, Madam Chair, it's a process of working within those constraints and trying to make the best decision possible.
I'd just like to lift up to you and the two members of the committee that are here, where you're watching something that works. And I would ask that as you're watching the terrible, terrible Virginia Tech massacre, that you watch what happened in the medical community there. They had an incident command center there, an incident command system that was set up at the site. The triage went into immediate response. The ambulances were there, and they were able to put people out. And you can watch it just on the tape as it takes place and unveils to you. And one of the people being interviewed talked about how many drills that one of the executive directors or the director of one of the hospitals talked about how often they had drilled. And that's the thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't some plan up on a shelf, but that they really knew and had planned, even though nothing of this magnitude would have ever been suspected. But they were ready, and they performed extremely well. And so the ones that got to the hospital today were moved from critical to stable, and they had no surgeries today. And so those are the kind of things that we're trying to accomplish here in many other areas. Mm-hmm. and having the instant response. That wasn't true of everything that I watched on television, and I'm very, very interested in that incident because I think that we are preparing for natural disasters but also terrorist attacks. And terrorism is anything that frightens everybody. Hmm. If you can scare everybody, then you have performed a good a plan of terrorists. And so I think that if you want to talk about fright, this is fright, and there are many questions would come to your mind. Why were students not told? Why did they mm-hmm. roam innocently on the campus instead of the immediate response? Most of the time, or at least the one that we want in Oregon, is lockdown, and lockdown in one location. And so that didn't occur. Had that occurred, maybe the shooter would have postponed his activity. But nevertheless, it didn't occur. There were a number of things that didn't occur. You know, the attack on the building, for instance, where what was going on inside, and you can watch on television, you can hear the guns going off as he literally executed people, and there were people outside that were not entering the building. So I think that we need to take really a heart at what we're doing on this committee. It is extremely serious. and we want to be very prepared. The communication part of it, I think, is critical in that if the communication systems go down, then we are at the mercy of being able to do whatever it is within our small area, not within Oregon. But what I would hope is that we can get Oregon prepared, that we can do whatever we need to do on our own, absolutely on our own. Just take everybody else away except for us. And the communication system is not there. And I think we're grasping, trying to find something that we can do. If you notice in the co-chair's budget, or maybe you did or didn't, that the planning portion of OWIN was left there. And that probably, you know, gives some people heart, and we haven't gotten that yet through. But at the same time, we don't know when we're going to need what we need. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very eager to know from the agencies and the communication systems that we have in place today, what can we depend on if tomorrow we have an incident? And in your report, Mr. Marsh, as well as I appreciate it, it doesn't give me a lot of encouragement about your ability with old equipment and three radios and some local governments that are not tied to you and so forth. If it's a statewide issue, if it's a coastal issue, or if it is an attack of some kind within one area where you need to be involved. I think the police, however, and law enforcement have all their ability to close roads. So give me a scenario where your people would really need to be communicating, just if you take anecdotally, a terrorist attack of some kind. Would your people go out and literally close highways?
Madam Chair, yes. In situations where we're the first on the site, many times we are the ones that close the highway. Okay. Even in the last hearing that Madam Chair was in, where we were discussing Highway 35 and the closure
right.
there, our folks get to the site first. It wasn't a terrorist situation, but it could have been the same if it was the Astoria Bridge and a terrorist situation.
Right.
If we identify the risk, in this case the river taking out the road, we close the highway, put out the emergency word to others to get it out as quickly as we can. Sometimes it is a challenge when we're at a remote location to get that communicated as fast as we can to folks, but we do want to make sure that gets out, and that is our responsibility to do. So, yes, we did site, and many times the first one to close that road and to set it up for an emergency situation and then to get together with our partners to talk about what needs to happen next, whether it's police. In the case of a terrorist attack, again, talking about a bridge or some other location, we do have background and practices and communication about what we would expect to happen on a big bridge like Astoria-Megler Bridge. But for the most part, we're talking about keying off of their ability from general examples and tests and exercises to be able to say, here's the kind of contacts I need to make and make sure those are done expeditiously.
And you do have more equipment than some of the agencies, too.
Madam Chair, we've got some heavy equipment that can help with reacting to situations, as well as, although the equipment we have is not perfect for dealing with interoperable communication, we feel like we can cover most of the state in terms of the highway system.
Highway system, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, so the benefit we have is a more narrow band than maybe law enforcement or others might be responding to a more rural area off the system.
Mm-hmm. Representative Krieger, Mr. Marsh has given us some written material. If you will have, if you have a minute to look it over, in case there are any questions you might like to ask. The purpose, we had multi-purposes in having you here, but one of the main purposes that we had in having Mr. Marsh come today is so that we can try to get a feel of what we have right now without the interoperability in OWIN if something were to happen. And he's done a good job in telling us that they have old equipment and there aren't too many people that are around that are going to even be able to know how to handle their equipment, and they order parts off of eBay. So with that background, you may have some questions.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. I can recall back 1964, I went to the state police in Gold Beach, and you couldn't get the other officer at the other end of town. If you got up the Chetco River, you were dead to everybody. And our equipment was antique then, and they were cannibalizing different things to put it together, and it was a dinosaur, you know. And so I think if you look what's happened here, and I had already read the one paragraph before I left where he talks about having to cannibalize stuff, and that's not a good way to do business. And if you have that type of equipment that might be working now, in the case of some type of an event, it may not be working, and then you don't have any way of getting your job done.
Do we have anyone else that's going to speak to us today? Is there anyone else that's going to be here from ODOT?
Not from the department, okay. Madam Chair.
All right. Senator George, do you have any comments? All right. Well, if there's no one else that's going to communicate, and if there are no other questions, do I have any other questions at all?
Not for ODOT. I do have a comment before you completely close the hearing.
All right. Very good. All right, I'm going to close the public hearing then and, with ODOT Communication System, and I greatly appreciate your being here today. As I said, it wasn't exactly what I had hoped to hear, and so we can cross our fingers and hope that something better comes to pass.
Madam Chair, thank you for your time. I did want to communicate one message that goes with that, which is the people of ODOT make up to some extent for the lack of technical support and foundation, and that's how we get the job done, is the people's commitment of getting that work done. But moving to the next level of an investment in the system is something that will make the system much more effective. Thank you.
I can believe that. Thank you very much. All right. Representative King.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Because you mentioned the unfolding situation and tragedy in Virginia, it put me in mind that we need to remember that our Director of Public Health, Dr. Susan Allen, came from Virginia and was there post 9/11 and through many of the challenges and many of the things that she's bringing to us. And I believe we will hear the public health law bill next week, I believe. Much of the experience that went into building some of those suggested upgrades for Oregon's system came from her experience in building that very triage system that you're watching unfold now, and that has thankfully worked fairly well for those individuals. So I would urge the committee to think very carefully and take very seriously Dr. Allen's recommendations for the upgrades that we do need in our own public health laws and medical response, public health kinds of response to whatever catastrophic situation that we might find ourselves in.
Good comments. I was amazed today that Senator Laurie Mons Anderson received her degree from Virginia Tech, and her husband was a professor there. And Senator Courtney also has a strong connection to Virginia Tech. So it was interesting today on the floor. Senator Mons Anderson gave a beautiful remonstrance about Virginia Tech. But I think that it lifts up for us that are talking about emergency preparedness in everything that we can possibly do in the time that we have in this session and in our thoughts of how else we need to do to get people in Oregon to understand the responsibility that we each are going to bear in case of an emergency and what we need to do and how we have to have our own plan. And I think that we cannot overstate the importance of this committee or the work that we're trying to accomplish, because in times of real disaster, I think we will either have done the job or people will say, why didn't you? And so I think it's really very serious. Any other comments for the good of the order? If not, I'll call the meeting adjourned.